live from Indianapolis, Indiana. Welcome to the Crossroads Sports Radio Show, presented by Scott K. Nichols and State Farm Insurance. And now, here's your hosts, Brandon Reif and Jonathan Birdsong.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Crossroads Sports Radio, episode number 178. I'm your host, Brandon Reif, joined as always by my main man, Jonathan Birdsong. JB, how are you?
Brandon Reif, what's going on, man? Crossroads listening audience, what's going on, man? What a great week and weekend in sports we had since the last time we all chatted, man. Dude, I can't wait to chop into it. I'm serious, man. I know we got a lot to cover tonight, man. So I don't even want to ramble on. So just give us the rundown.
Yeah, absolutely. We had a big show this evening lined up. We've got our continuation of the NCAA football season that is starting this weekend, week zero. We've got continuation tonight. We're going to talk Big 12, SEC, and maybe some Pac-12 if we have time. We may have to move it to a third week. So we talk preview those. We also preview the NFC, the National Football Conference of the NFL. We're going to talk the NFC East, the North, South, and the West tonight. Talk a little bit about that preview as we did last week with the AFC side. Tonight as well, we're going to talk a little bit of a wrestling, big week in wrestling when it comes to AEW, WWE, the battles, the match, NXT, full weekend of win-win-win for the wrestling fans. And then also tonight, reoccurring guest, Ball State men's golf coach Mike Fleck joins the show at 7 p.m. tonight. We come back and talk with him, see how he's been. We talk about how the Cardinals' 2020 season during the pandemic went, and then also preview the 2021 season. And then I'll also go ask him some golf questions, and obviously mine and his our Cincinnati Reds, who are kind of hot right now, pushing that playoff push right now. So we'll talk that. We did have last time we had Coach on was June 17th. Of 2020, so that was episode number 119, and we're at 178 now. So we've had a 49 shows since then, so it's definitely time to bring one back onto the show.
Absolutely.
So big show to talk about tonight, and then there's a little bit, you know, with the ACC, the little bit of the news with the ACC, Big Ten, and Pac-12 we'll talk about. So we're gonna waste no time tonight. We're gonna get right at it. We'll take some phone calls. We also have our guest tonight, so. Be mindful of that. If we don't get to you, we apologize, but we're going to try to get to what we can to get everything we can in on tonight's show. John, I want to dive right in. Two things. On the racing side of the world, I think Bob Jenkins, who is known as a great commentator for NASCAR and for IndyCar, ESPN, USAC, was on ESPN, was on Speed Channel, NBC Sports, all those. He passed away a couple weeks ago. Forgot to mention that. So big, big hit to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, one of the voices for Indianapolis Speedway. And then today, Robin Miller, journalist, TV personality, wrote for the Indy Star, wrote for Racer.com, worked for the Speed Channel, NBC Sports Network. Here in Indianapolis, big, big name, knows the who's who of everybody. Wasn't afraid to tell it how it was on the radio when he was on with our friend of the program, JMV, or others. But he passed away today at 71 from cancer. Wow. He was a big name at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Everybody knows Robin Miller. So two big Indianapolis figures and racing figures have passed away recently. I actually met Robin a couple years ago when I had credentials for Crossroads. And he was very, very friendly and got to talk to him for a few minutes, pick his brain. And, yeah, I thought he would just kind of say, get away from me, you little blogger boy. But, no, yeah, he answered a couple questions, and we talked about the track a little bit. But that 3 minutes, three or 4 minutes I spent with him was perfect. So RIP, rest in peace to those two. All right, John, diving in. I want to go into college football. Week zero is upon us this weekend. We've got a few games. We're not going to pick these games. We'll wait for week one to get our picks in. But we've got a big game this Saturday. Big Ten is going to give us a good one already. We're going to get Nebraska and Illinois at 1 o'clock Saturday. We got Hawaii and UCLA. UTEP and New Mexico State, and then Connecticut, UConn, and Fresno State, and then Southern Utah and San Jose. So Nebraska, Illinois is a little appetizer to wet the beak, some people say. Looking forward to it. Big Ten's shooting out. But big games, week zero is upon us.
Yeah, when you think about Nebraska and you think about Illinois, you have two teams kind of telling the Big Ten, just to be honest with you. Nebraska has, you know what I'm saying, had some issues last week, or still continuing issues with some recruiting violations, I do believe, well, program violations that Scott Frost is going to have to deal with or answer for. But that's all, of course, all off field. Illinois has a new coach that moved on. Man, I always want to say it's Bo Pelini, but that's not the coach's name.
I don't know.
Yeah. So they have their – so he's there to he's there to make a – put his mark on the team. You know what I'm saying? He did inherit Lovie Smith's, you know what I'm saying, team, which wasn't bad. Just wasn't necessarily top level, top four, top five, as far as Big Ten, you know what I'm saying, one loss records is concerned. So I expect the competitive. I know I'm not getting my pick right now, but I expect a competitive game there. Nobody wants to start out 0-1. So, because I would imagine the heat is on for Scott Frost. Considering what his time and tenure has been there, I know he's the favorite son that's returning to Nebraska. That has returned to Nebraska in the last several years or whatever, but that hasn't necessarily turned the program around to where, since Tom Osborne and the time that he played in the early 2000s, late 90s, where it was. So I would imagine, you know what I'm saying, a lot of pressure on Coach Frost and that Nebraska program. So, but again, so Illinois will be coming in, you know what I'm saying, probably, again, they don't want to necessarily lose, but not necessarily as much pressure. So, I expect a pretty good game. When you have those two factors, I expect a pretty good game.
Yeah, line is right now Nebraska by 8.5. I think it's within the 8.5. I think that Illinois covers it. Nebraska is kind of a must-win season, like you said, for Frost. Also, into a season to where you've already got enough pressure. The pressure cooker's already turned up for you to win. But now the NCAA is also probing an investigation for violations in recruiting and other things there at Nebraska. So now add that to the mix a little bit. And, it's going to be a tough go for Scott Frost, who was in the trash can, if you remember a couple years ago. We did our on the mantle or in the trash can, and I had that team in the trash can a couple times who couldn't ever see to get a win. Looking forward to that. All right, John, I want to dive in. Let's hit the big boy, SEC Conference, Southeast Conference, head of the table, Alabama, Crimson Tide once again, up top.
Right.
Preseason number one ranked overall. SEC is loaded once again. If it's not not every year, but I do like some different teams. I told you in these in this conference that I can see possibly winning. John, a sleeper pick here. That's not a sleeper, but a spoiler pick. I don't have Alabama winning the SEC championship. Okay. They may not even make it. They may not even make it to it.
Stop.
And I'm just going based off of a couple things. Number one, in their division, you have Alabama, Texas A&M, LSU, Ole Miss, Auburn, Mississippi State, and Arkansas. Well, obviously, there's only two teams that are going to win this side of the conference, in my opinion. That's going to be either Alabama or Texas A&M. The fact that Texas A&M gets to play Alabama at home, Texas A&M has the best defense that they've had there in the Jimbo Fisher era this year. The fact that they finally get to play them at home, great defense. The offense is starting to click. They almost made it last year. I think they finished fifth overall. I just think Texas A&M knocks off Alabama. This is not your Steve Sarkisian Alabama offense that's going to come in here. Do they keep – they turn over players? Absolutely. But Bill O'Brien,
yep.
I feel like there's going to be some hiccups with Bill O'Brien coming in and running that offense down here in Alabama. They always seem, after a big season, they always seem to find a way to stumble or skip a little bit. And stumble might be one loss. That's fine. But I just don't see them. If they lose to Texas A&M, A&M's got a great schedule. Great schedule. They're playing all their key opponents basically at home. The only one I see that would be the issue, if they would be, the last game of the season when they go to LSU. They're 0-4 in their last four games at LSU. So that's going to be the one of November 27th. That's going to come down to it for them if they're going to make it to that SEC championship. But you got Bama at home. You've got Auburn at home. You're at Ole Miss. Okay, you take on Lane Train there. But I think Ole Miss is going to have a couple hiccups. But I do like that squad this year. And I'll talk about them. But I love, love, love. And we'll just right now talk about the West Division with Alabama and Texas A&M. I love Texas A&M. On the other side, Georgia. I've already told you, Georgia is one of my picks to win the national championship. They are loaded. They are coming back.
Right.
I love their schedule. Love their schedule. I'm trying to find my paper for it right now. I just had it a second ago. Yeah, they've got Clemson that they're playing in Charlotte to open the season, so you're going to get a true litmus test there. They got to go to Auburn, so that might be a little tough one. But, shoot, nobody else on that schedule you look for Georgia scares me at all. And the fact that Kirby's coming in with his sixth year, JT Daniels coming back as the starting quarterback, this defense is picked up. I think this is the do or die. This is the year Kirby Smart and them go to that national championship. I like Georgia on that side. There's where my Texas A&M Georgia SEC championship comes in.
Well, I know our longtime listeners and friends of the program, Justin Powell and D-Cott, did not just love what you said about Alabama. Alabama did turn Alabama did turn a whole lot of pros players over to the NFL and whatnot. And you brought up a good point as well. They did, even though they did have a lot of turnover, they also brought a lot of, you know what I'm saying, 5-star, 4-star guys back in. Usually those guys are kind of by game day, they're ready and they're ready to go. But there is, even though he's been there before, like you said, you mentioned it before, and I think it needs emphasis on it. With O'Brien coming back, O'Brien, former head coach of the Texans, coming back to the college ranks, he's not the same guy that Sarkisian is as far as offense coordinator is concerned. I do believe Sarkisian was more pass happy, was more he liked a faster game. You know what I'm saying? That's kind of what he's known for. So that's what folks in Texas is hiring for. They want to catch up to. That's what they want. They want to, it's already pass happy in the Big 12, right? Anyway, but they want that same type of energy that he brought to Alabama. If you think about what Alabama averaged last year, I want to say it was over 20, I want to say it was over like 27 points average per game. So I could be wrong. I think it might even be more. But O'Brien, he's a little bit different. Play caller, play conservative. You know what I mean, Mike? You know what I'm saying? And in this day and age, you know what I'm saying, that there's going to be a different – even though they did transition some players, there's still some goodies left in that with that roster. That, you know what I'm saying, sophomores to turn into juniors and freshmen to turn into sophomores that still are used to Sarkisian's way of play calling. So there's probably going to be some potholes that they encounter, but there's going to be some stutters that they encounter. On their schedule, I don't know how the numbers in me as far as the rankings, as far as like what their power as far as schedule strength is versus another SEC team in front of me. But he did mention them having a tougher schedule than Texas A&M and potentially and outside of Georgia playing Clemson, which is an out of conference game. I think Alabama, you know what I'm saying, they you know what I'm saying, the screws are kind of, you know what I'm saying, put to them. So this year.
Alabama's got a tough schedule. They got to take on Miami, first game down in Atlanta. They got to go to Florida. Not saying that Florida's going to beat them, but they got to go to Florida. You take on Ole Miss, who you really couldn't stop on defense last year. You take them on. You go to Texas A&M. You're playing at home against Tennessee. You go to Auburn this year. I just think there's more opportunities. If I'm looking at it, there's more opportunities for a hiccup for Alabama than there is, if you look at the schedule, for Texas A&M. And that's why I give the edge to A&M on this for them to make it there. And the strength of schedule shows. The schedule difficulty, the A&M Aggies have the 44th hardest schedule. Alabama's got 19th. When's the last time you heard Alabama's strength of schedule being like the top 20? I mean, it's been a while. Usually they're playing those Jacksonville States and the Florida AMU.
Right, right. If you ask me, if you twist my arm right now, I you know what I'm saying, talent for talent, overall, it's probably Georgia's to lose. this conference. I said it in the comment session. Georgia, I don't know. I don't want to get copyright stricken by singing the old Ray Charles song, Georgia, but the SEC is Georgia to lose this year. JT Daniels, quarterback. He won't necessarily win. I don't think he wins the Heisman. If I had to pick a top five Heisman candidate, he'd probably be like number six, to be honest with you. But he'll be, you know what I'm saying, because of their win loss record and because of his performance, he'll be in that number as far as like people, you know, as far as mentions and whatnot. The Bulldogs are loaded at running back. I think George Pickens is the top wideout for them. I believe he's the sideline most of the year last year, I think. But like I said, a lot of these guys also, they're on display. You know what I'm saying? They got a lot of juniors and seniors that came back. And all these guys are, you know what I'm saying, are tired of losing to Alabama. And they're also trying to, you know what I'm saying, take that next step and get their names called.
Nine of the 11 starters are for Georgia this year. And they've got the 60th schedule difficulty. So the road's even clearer for them once they get past Clemson.
Yeah. The one school that I will say that is probably going to draw the most ire, it's kind of like how we kind of talked about Nebraska in the previous section, would be Florida and Coach Dan Mullen. Dan Mullen had, I do believe, 8 wins last year. Again, this is a COVID year, but you can't. Football definitely is one of sports that doesn't use COVID as an escape goat or anything like that. So he'll have some critical. You know what I'm saying? I mean, dude, all those banners and whatnot that they have down there, championship banners they have down there, and Tim Tebow, all those things matter, Brandon. With Tim Tebow and Urban Meyer playing in Jacksonville, and coaching in Jacksonville, all those things kind of bring the eyes and ears and like, well, why aren't you know? Even though it's two different, you know, one's pro and one's college, those things remind people that you know what I'm saying in the distant past that they were winners, man. So Dan Mullen. I'm not going to say hot seat because, again, you know, I do believe he just signed a contract, I do, like a year and a half ago. So the University of Florida does believe in him. But this is a year that he has to not settle for fourth or fifth or, you know what I'm saying? What they have there, they shouldn't necessarily even settle for second or third. You know what I mean?
I think they're going to have to, though, John, in my opinion. I think it's going to be here's the thing. I think they're going to have a difficult season this year. They only have 3 SEC home games all season. So you only have 3 conference games. And from the West, you have to go to Alabama and you're home against Alabama, but you then have to play also at LSU. So you drew the wrong 2 teams out of the other conference and you only have 3 total home SEC conference games. The road is tough for them. You got to go to a Kentucky team. Kentucky team is starting to build. They looked good the last 2 years. They're going to continue to build. You got Georgia. You play at South Carolina. Then you throw in Samford. So that might be your resume builder there. And then by the end of the season, who knows what you're going to get at Florida State. I that is one of the few teams, and we didn't get to talk about them SEC, ACC-wise of it for them. But what are you going to get with Florida State this year? Who knows by that point? But Dan Mullen, I think it's going to be a tough year for them, John. I've got them seven wins,
ooh.
Maybe another 4.
Ooh.
Sorry.
He'll survive just because he has, you know what I'm saying, contract survival and, you know, all those implications kind of come into play. But I would imagine he talks to the provost, the chancellor. They don't want to hear no excuses about losing to LSU or losing to Alabama. They don't.
Yeah. What's your thoughts with Tennessee? Tennessee comes in 3-7. They're not predicted to do very well this year. Josh Heupel, his first year coming over from UCF. Joe Milton is the quarterback for the Tennessee Vols. Looking at their schedule, they've got at Florida, at Alabama, at Kentucky, all against Georgia. And they take on a sneaky Pittsburgh team on September 11th. This looks ugly for Tennessee, Heupel's first year coming over from UCF.
Well, I congratulate Tennessee for scheduling strong, right? but they're gonna finish. They're not gonna finish last or anything like that. That's a spot reserved for Vanderbilt. Sorry, Skip Bayless, alumni of Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt should probably finish last, if not South Carolina. South Carolina is definitely, those teams are in rebuilding. Tennessee, Ole Miss, even I know you kind of giving LSU a little. That's a dangerous team, but those teams should be. Those teams are going to be running out the bottom this year. They'll of course because they're name brand teams. They'll get and they'll still win from somebody. That nobody kind of expected. You know what I mean? But those teams, I don't necessarily see finishing in the top five or top three at all.
I'm big on the Lane train. Ole Miss, the Rebels, Lane train coming in second year there, 5-5 last season. They beat the Hoosiers in the bowl game. That kind of came on. They gave Alabama a big run back when they played them. They lost 63-48. They got the high offense, high octane offense. Matt Corral, sophomore quarterback, is coming back. Do I think he's a Heisman candidate? Probably not this year. Maybe next year he might be more of a Heisman candidate. But I love this team. Yes, they just lost, what was the wide receiver they lost? John, I can't think. Elijah Moore. Elijah Moore led them in yards last year. So they're going to have to regroup there. But Lane Train's offense, they should be in the top three in the SEC offense once again this year, I believe. Absolutely. They've got eight starters coming back on offense, nine coming back on defense. Plus, they had a decent recruiting class this year. So they only lost 21 guys. They returned 64 overall. Their schedule is kind of a little bit of a rough schedule if you look at it. Louisville, they play them in Atlanta on Labor Day. Then they got Austin Peay and Tulane at Alabama, home against a dreadful Arkansas team. At Tennessee, they should win. LSU, well, Tennessee, I mean, that's going to be a rivalry game. Damn, they're going to be pissed off enough that Lane train with him. Then they got Tennessee, LSU, Alabama. So those three tough games. And then here, really, Liberty. This is how crazy it is. Liberty's coming back. Liberty, you remember, John, had a great season last year. Hugh Freeze. Coaching Liberty. He comes back to Ole Miss where he had the strippers and all that allegations that happened against him. He comes back to Ole Miss this year on November 6th to take on Ole Miss. So that's going to be a great game. And then they got Texas A&M the next week. That's like five huge games in a row for Ole Miss that it's going to make or break, obviously, their season. It doesn't look good. Then they finish, obviously, with the Egg Bowl against Mississippi State on a Thursday night on Thanksgiving. But, man, it's a gauntlet stretch. Tennessee, LSU, at Auburn, Liberty, Texas A&M. Whew.
Well, that's you know what I'm saying? Every time somebody starts mentioning anybody at SEC play, they always end with a woo because it is widely considered the best, from a competitive standpoint, the best conference. I know maybe we'll do a poll sometime later this week. Is it the Big Ten? Is it the ACC? Is it the SEC? But, like, for the most part, just because of Alabama's dominance and LSU's dominance in years past, and like I said, like as I alluded to, Florida, but that was maybe, you know, saying 10, 15 years ago. But again, they're also a very dangerous team. We all consider, you know, saying any type of SEC play, you know what I'm saying, man, you know, flip a coin sometimes, depending upon who's out there, quarterback, or who's out there at running back or what the defense looks like. So SEC play, as we all know, is going to get even better, quote, you know what I'm saying, in the next several years when Texas and Oklahoma come over.
I've got Auburn as my disappointment team out of this conference this year. First-year head coach Brian Hartman coming over. Coming over from Boise, he was at Boise State for the last 6-7 years. That was a weird hire for me. And
right, considering the great alumni, football coaches that they have, litter out through the NFL and litter out potentially even through, you know, saying the college ranks. Boise State always is like football. It's like their academy themselves. You know what I mean? So. But we're not necessarily thinking regionally or anything like that. But when Boise, Idaho, to Auburn, you know what I'm saying? It usually doesn't necessarily bode well when you go some when you jump that, you know what I'm saying, that way nationally. I can't remember the shame on me, Brandon. I know you can look it up. Remember the guy who was joining Arkansas, and like, you know what I'm saying, he ran, he had a great program in Wisconsin.
Wasn't that Brett Bielema?
I cannot remember his name.
Brett Bielema, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He's in Illinois now.
Yeah, that's what it was. And now he's back in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he left Wisconsin. He had a powerhouse, you know, and he you know, say Arkansas. I do believe it was Arkansas. They showed him the money, showed him a bigger paycheck, and he thought that he could just go down there with the same type of program and plan, and it just kind of fell flat. I don't know. I hope that doesn't necessarily bode well for Auburn. Auburn does have – I mean, they're just like Florida. You know what I'm saying? They've had some history in flirting with the national championship or winning the national championship when Cam was there. But they have some history of playing for national championships, man, and they want to get back to that. They don't want to lose against Alabama in the Iron Bowl. They don't want to lose against Georgia or anything like that. So they were there. But you're right. I can't necessarily see them jumping up into the top four. You know what I'm saying? With you know what I'm saying? Not with the first year coach. No,
not at all. I thought it was a head scratcher of a hire to begin with, bringing him over here. So, especially with all the other SEC talent that you had out there that you could go out and get, with the likes of Sarkisian and some of these others, and they decided to go from Boise State. So shocker there. We got our first caller, friend of the program, KTAP Connection, Fred Fellner. Fred, my guy. What a weekend.
I thought you were going to play me in with the music. I was waiting for it.
Or I would.
There you go. Yeah, I think you can get away with like 7 seconds of it. Shout out to the Living Color. Hanging in there, man. Just hanging in there. It was a wild weekend. I got like 4 hours of sleep coming back from Chicago, and then I do a part-time gig with Live Nation, so we had a concert to work. So I was working like 13 hours after that CM Punk debut into AEW. So, but as Triple H once said, I'm tough enough taking the bump stuff. it's all good. So it was worth it. Trip well worth it. And man, what an insane just day and night that was so incredible.
Yeah, walk us through just kind of you going up there, kind of the atmosphere, how it was beforehand, walking into the arena, and then kind of as it started, and kind of just give us the I guess the boots on the ground report of kind of what it was to feel like there.
Oh yeah, so we hit the pavement pretty early. We left about 10 a.m. Eastern, and we had to make some stops there, you know, because, you know, Illinois is a different state than had to make a stop there. But, yeah, no, we got there, and first stop was Pro Wrestling Tees, and they had some cool stuff, but a lot of the punk stuff was sold out. I definitely got a New Jack shirt. I gotta tag you guys on Twitter. I know Bertle appreciate it, but I got a New Jack shirt, so had to get that one crazy. So yeah, we all walked away with some merch, and that was fun. And then stopped and got some wings, and we were right around near the United Center. Traffic as usual in Chicago was crazy, but walking around the streets of Chicago, you know, going to get wings and then kind of walking around, you know, like when you're in town for a Mania or you're in a, you know, in a sports town and there's a rival game going or there's a big game, you can feel something in the air, and there's a lot of scuttlebutt about it. People are talking, there's excitement. It's this tangible thing that you can't see, but you can feel, and you could definitely feel it. Your boy is, you know, this isn't his first rodeo, so I went on the old Park Wiz app. No, it's not a sponsor, but it should be. Shout out to the Park Wiz app. I got parking. It was like $25 to park kitty corner to the United Center. So we were looking across the street at AEW trucks, and so parking was clutch. We parked right next to the exit and kind of hung out and you know, partied a little bit in the tailgate area, and there were people coming up, and that's when it got really exciting. Everybody had, you know, CM Punk shirts on and stuff like that. I had to wear, I know my Detroit brethren are going to look down on me, but I had to wear Jordans to Chicago as a Detroiter, as a Bad Boys Pistons fan, as a Pistons fan. I had to at least represent. I wore piston colored Jordan 1, so it was kind of like a truce, sort of like, you know, I'll meet you halfway sort of thing. So had to represent there. So, yeah, the United Center, I've never been. That's honestly my first time attending. Like I said, we walked right up to it. It was right there. And already there's, like, lights on it, which I had no idea that they kind of modernized the United Center. With all the lights and stuff, because they had, like, different wrestlers' faces and stuff up on it. And when you walk in, we got in pretty easy. I mean, I was expecting long lines. That crew just worked everybody in. I'm not sure the official count on attendance. I thought it was, like, 16,000. It could have been more. It was so easy getting in. And so we got in, and right off the bat, there was a merch stand. So we looked at some merch, and the merch was, you know, pretty generic, like just AEW shirts in different colors. But I had a sneaking suspicion that we were going to get some Punk merch at some point in the night, maybe towards the end of the night.
Mm-hmm.
So we sat down in the 100 section. We were dead center to the ring, pretty much a couple rows before the floor. And one thing I can say critically, you know, about AEW is, like, the dark and elevation stuff that they were pumping out, at least for that night, it was very formulaic. Like, they really weren't matches. It's like a jobber would come in, and then, you know, they'd play the theme song of, like, the actual superstar. The match would be, like, 2 to 3 minutes, and they would shuffle the next person in. So there was 2 hours of, you know, dark matches until Rampage came on. So we had lights kind of blinding us in our faces. So we went to the concourse for a little bit. We found the Jordan statue and took a bunch of pictures in front of the Freudian slip there. We were laughing, like, is he postering Craig Elo? Like, is that Craig Elo in the statue that he's postering? So we took pictures with the statue, and that was really cool. And we waited till about 9:45 Eastern time, 9 Central for Rampage. Tony Khan got on the mic. Go ahead. Sorry, I know I'm kind of like going.
So when Rampage officially starts, I'm watching on TV. There's no way that they don't bring him out first. There's no way they bring him out like at the tail end of the show or in the middle of the show, right?
Yeah, we were having that discussion ahead of time, like right where I left my story off. We were sitting there debating. We're like, man, no way. Because the fans would hijack the show. The whole show would just be CM Punk for an hour. You know, Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy out there giving us like a 3.5-star match, and we're yelling CM Punk at him. So there was no way. They had to get it out of the way first. What tipped everybody off before you guys got to see it is like maybe 4 minutes before, because they had the countdown on the Jumbotron. At about 4 minutes, the lights kind of dimmed, and they play the Alan Parsons song, the Chicago Bulls song. And I get goosebumps. I look over, my buddies are all just, we're going nuts. And that's when Tony Khan came out and kind of addressed the crowd. And he was screaming, I love you guys. Like, thanks for making this possible, blah, blah, blah. And so that right there, I knew, like, he's coming out first. There's no, like, between the music and Tony Khan coming out and giving that kind of speech, Punk's coming out. And
they ran
the signature package at the beginning, and, you know, they showed the announce team. There was kind of a delay, and then Cult of Personality kicks. And that was the loudest pop I've ever heard in my life at a wrestling show ever. And
I was going to ask you that, man. What, before we get into what some of the other things that happened this weekend, or even some things that Punk was talking to, was saying, kind of what pop could you think? Even, I don't know. I was never there, but I had text Brandon like later on the next day. I said, I don't think there was a bigger pop for somebody debuting other than like Jericho when he first came over from WCW to WWE. And I wish I was there to experience that, but I don't remember anything. you know what I'm saying? People knowing what's, you know what I'm saying, what's going to happen anyway, but still people losing their mind. I don't remember anything compared to, like, what CM Punk coming through, hitting that curtain. Could you compare it to anything? Even, I know you said it's the loudest problem that you've been there, being in that venue, but could you compare it to anything else?
I mean, that's the thing, dude. Like, I've been to WrestleManias. I've lost count of manias. I've been to – I was at the first All In, you know, the first AEW pay-per-view. I've been to so many things. I've seen so many wrestlers that haven't been out coming back. I mean, Triple H of the Garden is one. Jericho interrupting The Rock is one. The most electric crowd, let's put it this way, the most electric crowds ever for me, top three, were Mania 18 when Hogan and Rock tangled. And when that match was going, that crowd was, and again, you could feel it. You knew it was going to happen. The crowd at HBK Taker Mania in Texas, I was there for that crowd. But see, that's just an energy, like the crowd was just real loud and buzzing. It's, as you were saying, it's hard to gauge, like, you know, like if you've ever been. I mean, I've been to the Joe several times and saw Stone Cold come out, and when that glass hit, it was always loud. This punk debut was just, that's the loudest thing I've ever heard. And not even wrestling, concert, like play, like it doesn't matter. That's the loudest I've ever heard an audience scream for somebody. And not just loudest, but longest. Like, they kept the energy up. Any other sports town, you know, any sports market, they could probably die down and it wouldn't have been. Chicago is one of the best wrestling cities in the world. And it's their guy. It's their hometown guy. And you just felt right. It that night. And it seemed like it went out. It was only a 20-minute deal with Punk. It felt like an hour. It felt like he was out there for like an hour. So,
right.
Yeah, that is the loudest ovation I've ever heard in my life.
Nice.
What do you
good
think?
To hear. And, go ahead, John.
Go ahead, Brent.
Go ahead.
What do you think the guys up north kind of thought about that?
They're doing the too cool for school thing, like Roman Reigns is his comment about Punk.
Hey, I didn't like Roman. I mean, there's a way to do it, but I didn't like what Roman said at all, because that's not he was kind of saying like that Punk wasn't a draw, and we all know that to be true.
And when I read Punk, I heard Cameron and Dame Dash in my head on the O'Reilly Factor. You mad? I heard that in my head when I heard Roman Reigns. That is proof enough that AEW's competition. For anybody that says they're not, there was all of this talk this weekend and saltiness. It almost sounded like an ex-girlfriend, like, got with another dude, and you're like, man, I'm not worried about her anymore. And then you go on for, like, 30 minutes about, you know, like, why her boyfriend, the new boyfriend, sucks. And she's like, that's what it came off as. And it's funny to me because a lot of the rhetoric is, oh, well, they just talk about WWE and their promos all the time. But anytime there's a signing or anything like that, they make attempts to kind of thwart it. And the hilarious thing of me, not to jump the gun, I don't know if you guys had more questions or about SummerSlam, but the funniest aspect to me was that they answered Punk in that epic debut. They answered that with Becky Lynch returning to squash Bianca Belair. And then Brock Lesnar looking like he listens to, you know, Korn circa 1999.
Oh, man.
The onion man bun thing that he has going on. Like, and now we got Reigns and Lesnar for the 9 millionth time. And that's supposed to be, you know, Reigns says Punk doesn't push the needle, but that's pushing the needle. Like, you know, pro wrestling, his website crashed. And Punk's shirt became the biggest selling shirt over the Bullet Club ever.
I just think up north looked at things that from a monetary standpoint, you had grown men emotional, cheering, losing their mind. I even seen a guy crying, and I know people were making fun of the guy crying, but like, dude, that you know what I'm saying? That's what brought you to tears. That's what brings you to tears, you know what I'm saying? But the WWE used to, that's what they kind of used to be their brand, you know. And they had CM Punk, albeit in like he was in a back behind the curtain role for like the last couple of years or so. And for whatever reason, you shouldn't believe he was a marketable guy, which is bug to me.
The only, mark my words, the only two emotional things that WWE can cling to, as far as the most emotional you'll see them, or like emotional that their fans will get invested into, is Taker getting into the Hall of Fame and Vince McMahon passing away. That's probably the only two monumental, like, big things that they have cooking that they have where their crowd would probably see a lot of tears and, like, that level of emotion. Outside of that, like, especially active roster, there's nothing really even close. So it's kinda,
I think,
like, right now, it's like, let's get, you know. Go ahead. I thought Brandon had said something.
Yeah, I said I think Ric Flair will be another one once he passes. I think that's one that would be kind of move the audience a little bit there. Overall, I've heard it ad nauseum this weekend just based off of Twitter and people I've talked to. Well, this one beat this one, and this one beat this one, and this one was good, but this one, you know what? Damn, as a pro wrestling fan, I thoroughly enjoyed the entire weekend from Friday to Saturday all the way to Sunday. And I thought,
yeah.
I thought the best damn, one of the best match I saw all weekend was for the UK Heavyweight Championship with Walter.
Oh,
and that is the pure, I said to John, that is the definition of pure wrestling right there. And the just shows on both those bodies, on both those faces.
Yeah, absolutely. Have you watched their first match against each other?
I have not. I need to go back and watch that one. But
I mean, that's right up there with that. Like, yeah, that one is right up there with that. Both of those guys, I mean, Ilja Dragunov and Walter. If you're a fan of WXW, it's like a German indie. It's like a German super indie. They do a tournament called 16 Karat Gold. I was familiar with them from way back then and started becoming a fan. That really was the reason to watch TakeOver. I kind of was let down with Cole and O'Reilly. It's a blood feud, but there's no blood. Cole not really having the ceremonious, like, thank you, Cole, or anything like that kind of leads me to believe that he's going to be on Wednesday and Friday nights now, you know. But that NXT UK match was incredible. That's the best WWE-produced match I've seen in the longest time. I will say, though, I got to give them their flowers, too. I'm not just going to hate on WWE the whole time. Shout out to Rollins and Edge for putting on a banger at SummerSlam. I mean, SummerSlam, I didn't watch it, but the match that was given, like, hey, check this one out. That one, man, that delivered, and the two of them, especially Edge can still go. They just work so well together. So that was another highlight of this weekend.
Fred, like I would give SummerSlam. I did watch it because I do have the Peacock Network, so I did watch it. Man, SummerSlam was pretty good. It really was. It was as memorable as, you know, Macho Man. You know what I'm saying? Of course not. Or, you know what I'm saying? Well, from the past, but it was pretty good. Some of the psychology is still off, unfortunately. You know what I'm saying? The Brock Lesnar and then Lashley match. You know what I'm saying? Psychology afterward is off. I would say Sheamus. The same match that he had with I can't remember his name. Damian Priest. Man, that was a pretty good match. But like I said, when you mentioned Becky Lynch and her, you had this great build up for the champion. And I get it, Becky Lynch is coming back. She's kick ass. But you know what I'm saying? How many seconds did she lose? She lost to Bianca Belair, lost in 20 seconds or something.
Like 26
like that.
Seconds.
Yeah, that's she doesn't deserve that. Yeah, that's like Raven losing to Goldberg, and he does, you know what I'm saying, back in the day for the U.S. title. He didn't deserve that either, you know what I'm saying, for being, you know, how much you put into her, how much you put in. I get it. You want to transition your championships, you know what I'm saying, pretty, you know what I'm saying, when it's time, but you invested and made, if you booked somebody, you know what I'm saying, like real good, you know, or excellently like they did Bianca Belair, you don't want, you know what I'm saying, you want to, when Becky Lynch comes back, But then, I mean, you know, more than 20 seconds. You know what I mean? More than 20 seconds, so for sure. So, but like, nah, man, I liked SummerSlam, and I really did love NXT, and that's not, dude, I didn't even have time to watch. I know Ring of Honor had a pay-per-view. I didn't even get a chance to check that out. But I did watch a little bit of Impact, just because it's a carryover from some from AEW, and even they had a pretty good show. So, great weekend for professional wrestling.
And we got ice cream bars, dude. That
yeah.
was, and that wasn't like some whack like Blue Bunny from Walmart, like freezer burnt stuff. That was like gourmet Häagen-Dazs ice cream bars. You know what's crazy too is we laughed about it. We were outside eating them, and I kept my wrapper. You know, I'm keeping that. People are selling the wrappers on eBay for like $60. They're selling the whole ice cream for like $1,000. Like, freaking nuts. But
wow.
I think it's cool when you talk about storytelling and stuff. I think that's just such a great thing that Punk did, that he paid for the ice cream out of his own pocket. But it's almost like a thank you to the fans for hanging in there. And we didn't really address much of what he said, I guess. But that, I think, was the thing that stood out to me the most, and what I connected with as just as a person, was him flat out saying, if any decision that I made in the last 8 years upset you or offended you, just know, like, the decisions I made were, there was no way I was going to benefit me, you know, spiritually, emotionally, mentally. When he said that, dude, that just, that registered with me and connected with me. And I think it connected with a lot of people. The fact that, you know, as wrestling fans, sometimes we get selfish and we forget that these people are human beings, and the stuff that they got to deal with, we have no idea. And it's just, that was the biggest thing in the promo that connected to me, and I'm glad he brought it up. And, you know, his little jab was subtle, you know. On, you know, this date in August 2005, I left professional wrestling. That is an accurate statement. And so that was such a just, I loved the subtleness of that jab. He got into Punk pipe bomb pose and got down on the ground Indian style. And, of course, like,
right.
when sitting down is over, like, you can get Indian style sitting over.
Right.
That's
well,
all you have to do. The crowd goes nuts, you know.
He transitioned the conversation pretty well, because he immediately, you know, saying they're going to start a program with him, Darby, and potentially Sting, which makes sense. You know what I mean?
I wasn't
trying
there. I ran out of the arena. I ran out of the arena at that point. I ran to get a shirt.
I didn't get the thing part.
I didn't even know we were getting ice cream bars until I ran back. They're like, dude, he said we're getting ice cream. But this dude, like, almost speared me in my aisle, because that part where he's like, man, it's getting hot in here, and he unzipped his jacket, his little hoodie. As soon as he showed the shirt, this dude came barreling at me like Urlacher style. And this guy, I mean, I'm a big boy. Like, he had, like, an inch on me, like, a bigger chest. And, like, he knocked my buddy's drink over and knocked him over. And then we can't, like, I stopped him. Like, I grabbed him by his shirt collars. And he was, like, nose to nose with me. And he was like, I'm so sorry. I was like, dude,
so,
what are you doing? He's like, oh, I'm
so
running
Fred,
to the merch stand.
How long till we have to deal, I mean, not deal, how long till Bryan Danielson's, or Daniel Bryan, I don't know what he's going to go by once he appears. How long do we have to wait for a similar reaction?
So the rumor right now is that he's going to be at the Arthur Ashe Show in New York, which that date is Wednesday, September 22nd. So in about a month or so, we're hopefully going to hear the final countdown music play in that beautiful Arthur Ashe Arena.
Nice.
And it's in New York. You know how rabid those fans get.
Right.
That's going to be another ovation. If you were there, you're going to remember it forever type moments. And we're off to the races right now as far as excitement goes in wrestling. So.
Perfect. All right. Hey, Fred, I put it on Twitter, but listen, we're going to get some good content. We get the three of us to go to AEW when it comes November 10th.
Oh, that'll be great. I would love to. You know, I'm down. I'm going to be there. I have plans to also go to the Full Gear show. That pay-per-view is going to be in St. Louis. So, I mean, that's less than 4 hours. That's a layup. So,
yeah, for sure.
I got plans to go see that. But, yeah, I'm still down for Rams-Colts, guys. I'm still down for Rams-Colts week two.
I'll be there. I'll be downtown. I don't know if I'll be working and be able to go to the game or not, but I'm going to do my damnedest. But for sure, Jonathan, start saving your pennies now for AEW. Uh-oh. And we'll try to get Jonathan down from the Darby Allin seats down a little bit closer to the
coffin
drop. Because I do want to get it on camera. I got to get Jonathan singing Judas. So it's going to happen.
Oh, wow. Judas on my mind.
Oh, that's nothing. That's nothing. He karaoke's with his daughter on IG all the time, I think.
Yeah, shout out Zion. That's a good
deal.
All the time.
Fred, let us know when those, in case I don't see it, let us know when those tickets are getting ready to go on sale. That way we can coordinate.
I'll keep you on the loop. Yeah, I'll keep you on the loop for sure. Hey, shout out to Pizza Hut, tonight's Dynamite meal for Wednesday night. They brought back the Detroit-style pizza.
Ooh.
So everybody go out to your local Pizza Hut and eat what a real pizza tastes like from the best city.
Awesome.
What up,
Fred?
Though? Thanks, guys.
Fred Feltner.
I lost Jonathan, too. You lost Fred and lost Jonathan both. Thanks to Fred and KFAB Connection for calling in. Do want to thank our sponsor, Maverick Custer Motorsports, and Scott K. Nichols and State Farm Insurance. We're going to get Jonathan back on here in a minute. While we do that, we're going to do a couple ad reads. We'll be right back.
You've changed thousands of diapers, cut off hundreds of crusts, played hours of peekaboo and duck because you'd do anything for your kids. That's why it's so important to protect them with life insurance from State Farm. State Farm Insurance agent Scott K. Nichols will help make it easy and affordable to help protect your family no matter what the future holds. Because for the people you do anything for, life insurance could mean everything. Call State Farm agent Scott K. Nichols in Indianapolis today at 317-243-3509. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
We also want to thank our sponsor, Maverick Custom Motorsports, where ideas are created and dreams are born, specializing in custom motorcycles, boats, slingshots, Jeeps, and trucks, offering pickups, deliveries, and shipping worldwide. Check them out today, maverickscustommotorsports.com. As I mentioned, they ship worldwide, custom motorcycle build, custom audio accessory installs, LED lighting, all the bright lights and glamour, custom wheels. They carry all the top brands and more. Give them a call today, 833-SHOP-MAV. That's 833-746-7628, or check them out online, maverickscustommotorsports.com. All right, and it looks like we do have JB back. JB, welcome back, my man. Sorry, I hit trigger finger.
Oh, okay. I thought the SEC was hating on me again, man, because I talked so bad about Paul Feinbaum this past weekend and his loathing for this Big Ten ACC Pac-12 alliance. I thought the ACC had gotten stuck on my phone and hung up on me again. But it's all good, man. No, not at all.
D-Kai, I do see you on hold, my man. We will get you on here if you want to call in later on. We've got a guest coming on in 6 minutes. So you can either hang on hold the entire time or call back. But, yeah, we got a guest on here shortly. Ball State men's golf coach Mike Flex is going to join us. We're going to talk a little bit of golf. We're going to talk his fall season, or the season they just had during the pandemic. We're going to talk the 2021 season, this young team they have coming in. Also, John, they also hosted, and I kept an eye on it, they also hosted the 2021 NCAA Regionals. So I kind of want to talk to him and ask him about that, how it was hosting it, being able to see a lot of the top collegiate golfers from around the United States come over here play. I also want to ask him how much golf, you know, just some mental golf questions. Just, you know, how do you reset yourself? How much golf is too much golf? Rory McIlroy talked about it today in an interview that he's mentally and physically tired. So, like, how much golf is too much? And kind of, you know, I pick his brain on that and a little bit more. So if you have any golf questions as well, you want us to ask him, put them in the chat on the Facebook live show. And we'll get those out. Ask him when he comes on. Shout out. I got my Ball State Chirp Chirp shirt on. So shout out to the Shop Indy, hopefully a future sponsor, making a Crossroads shirt for us. John, news or noise? I think it's just news. The ACC, Big Ten, and Pac-12 all come out and have a big alliance, quote-unquote alliance, and ends up saying, hey, you know what, we're going to schedule. So that way, but hell, you could already schedule. I mean, Ohio State's already playing Oregon this year in football. I thought it was a lot of noise or news. Wasn't that much noise. And I figured it was something they said, oh, we got to figure out something to counter what the SEC did. I didn't think it was that big of a deal what they announced.
I think it's I'm going to go the other direction. I think it's a big deal. They don't want to be
–
they don't want to part some of this. They just don't want to part some revenue split with the SEC. A lot of these guys behind – uh-oh, what you got?
Breaking news. Breaking news in the world of college basketball. Jeff Goodman, at Goodman Hoop, has announced that Imani Bates has announced he is heading to Memphis. Penny Hardaway is landing more of a recruiting class with Bates and Jalen Duren. The Tigers are preseason top 10, maybe top 5, but Imani Bates, who had a couple different offers to go different places and maybe G League and all, Imani Bates is heading to Memphis. Penny Hardaway, and now I think Rasheed Wallace is out there as an assistant as well. So Imani Bates, John, a piece of the puzzle, is landing for Memphis for at least 1 year.
Yeah, man, I know this is the excitement. I was already there with Penny Hardaway being head coach for the last couple of seasons, man. So now they're starting to compete with the Kentuckys and the Dukes of the world for A-level talent, or even with Imani Bates stays 1 year. You know what I'm saying? It's bringing, you know what I'm saying, more eyes and ears to that university. I thought he really would go to the G League. Just because it's automatic money, you know what I'm saying, kind of sort of somebody of his talent level, and you know what I'm saying, you get to play real life NBA level basketball for over 20 or so games during the fall and winter months. Now, is the eyes and ears on you like it would be for a college university? No, but you know what I'm saying, I would say, think about like how you impress so much with Jalen Green. You know what I'm saying? He's one of the kids that chose not to go to college last year. And man, what you saw, you know what I'm saying, in the summer league, you know what I'm saying? So I'm not saying that they won't prepare him. Penny Hardaway and Rasheed Wallace won't necessarily prepare him for the next level if he decides to go pro his sophomore, you know what I'm saying, his second year. I think all things kind of point to that. Is that he will just be a 1 year deal with him in Memphis. But but again, like I said, I just kind of telling, you know what I'm saying, Izzo, no, basically, rescinding his scholarship offer from Michigan State. I just assumed that he was probably going to go pro or pro to the G League or go to hell, even overtime elite offered him. So,
yeah. Let's not be about money.
We'll see.
Gotta be.
Mm-hmm. They found some NIL money for him.
Yeah. But yeah, now Penny Hardaway and them have two top five talents from enrolling this year. So two top fives coming in. Do I think Memphis can win the championship? No, probably not. Can they finish in top 10? Probably. Yeah, absolutely. But Imani Bates, one of the big pieces, finally announced it. I was shocked. I just saw I had to put the breaking news sounder on there. He's going to Memphis. So we'll see what happens. Hell, they'll probably end up winning their conference at least again.
When we bring on Coach Abby or Coach Merriweather from the women's program, we'll have to you know what I'm saying, ask them later on this fall. We'll have to ask them some of their thoughts. Well, they transitioned from Rice State to Memphis over the summer. We'll have to ask them some of their thoughts on the whole program of sports program of Memphis, and as well as like what the buzz is around the both basketball programs for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, I don't want to leave our guests waiting, John. Without further ado, we're going to bring on friend of the program, reoccurring guest. Last time he was with us, John, was 49 episodes ago, way too many. Ball State men's golf coach, Mike Fleck. Coach, welcome back.
Hey, Brandon. Hey, Jonathan. How are you guys doing, man?
Good. Yourself?
No complaints. I'm actually sitting at the golf building. I had the team over for a little meal, and they're out in the parking lot right now. We're playing a little cornhole tournament.
Oh, nice. Very good to hear. Hey, we got great weather for it now. So,
great weather, and the reason I'm able to get on this call at 7 o'clock is that I've already been eliminated from that tournament.
Hey, I hear you. Coach, I wanted to – first thing before we get into your guys' season and stuff, hey – how about, and Jonathan, you can take a seat back on this, how about our Cincinnati Reds? I mean, are we not making space? We're getting close.
You know what? It's going to be, I hate to say this, but I think it's going to be a 5 or 6 week stretch of heartbreak. It's too good to be true right now. I mean, I went to bed last night with a 3-run lead up 4-1. I woke up this morning to a notification of a 3-run loss, 7-4. And, you know, that's our Reds, right?
Yep. Hey, I was looking, and I put in a bet on old Joey Votto to win MVP, because if they keep this hot streak, he is plus 1,800, and I can't pass it up, because right now nobody's playing better than he is right now playing baseball.
It's an exciting team to watch. I mean, I went down last week to one of the Chicago games, and that series was a little disappointing. But, you know, they put up runs. They have good starting pitching. We live and die on that bullpen. I don't know if you – I get all the notifications on my phone, and I saw a notification pop up today that Castellanos is choosing to opt out of his year next year to kind of test the waters. And, you know, it's just tough that we can't keep really good players and try to sustain it in Cincinnati being a, you know, kind of a small market team. But it's fun to watch them this year. I love it.
Yep, absolutely. I'll take it this year and take a couple more years of misery before we try to do it again. So, but I'll tell you what, Coach, last time we talked to you, we were in a flat out in the middle of a pandemic, and you guys had a season that was going to come and weren't sure really what to expect. Kind of tell our listeners kind of how the 2020 season kind of went for you guys and kind of how it you guys finished up on a crazy pandemic year.
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, you go all the way back to March the year before, and we get back from Arizona, and, you know, everybody was talking about COVID but didn't really know coronavirus, didn't know what it was. And, you know, we watch that NBA game, and, you know, that game gets stopped, and all those conference tournaments start pulling kids off the floor. And, you know what, right. None of us would have guessed that we're still dealing with it. And, you know, we lost the fall season. We were fortunate to be able to play this spring, like you mentioned, and, you know, kind of going through all the protocols and the testing and, you know, just the safety stuff, but we were able to pull it off. And, you know, we ended up kind of salvaging what I would call kind of a underachieving spring by playing pretty well in the conference and finishing third. So, you know, it's just exciting now to be able to look and say, hey, we got a full fall season. We've got a full spring season planned. You know, we still have to jump through some hoops with, you know, the safety of it all. But right. I'm just looking forward to playing in the fall and getting this thing going, because last year, like you said, we were in a much different place.
Mm-hmm. John?
Coach, you know, Ball State Coach Mike Flake, I want to remind everybody listening to this who we're talking to, and me and Brandon are both alumni of Ball State University. I got to ask you, what kind of opportunity, because I haven't been to Ball State, I haven't been back to Ball State since like 2019. I think I was there for homecoming or so. What kind of opportunities from a recruiting standpoint with a potential athlete, what kind of opportunities does Ball State kind of offer? What are some of the things that Ball State kind of offers a potential athlete to come to Ball State?
Well, I tell you what. I mean, first, there's two things that jump out to me for even just general students recruitment: beautiful campus and the people. You know, this campus is amazing, and you said you haven't been here for a few years. I mean, you come up the campus now, and that whole stretch of the north part of campus is absolutely amazing. We've got new dormitories. They've rerouted some of the road that connects to McKinley to go through campus. La Follette is gone, and it's just so hard to believe. I mean, it was the biggest building on campus, and it's right. gone. You know, so physically, you know, the campus is beautiful, and we hear that a lot from people that, you know, prospects and families that come visit. They're like, wow, you know, I never this is totally different than what we were envisioning. And then the other thing, obviously, from a general student recruitment is the people. I mean, we have professors teaching all the classes. The people from every corner of campus to the other are friendly and in it for the student experience. And then obviously you kind of roll into athletics. And for us, it's the golf facilities and it's the opportunity to experience a championship level experience. And, with this EYGC, the Earl Yesingsmeyer Golf Center, it's incredible the training opportunities that they have. And we play two great golf courses with Delaware Country Club and the Players Club. And, right next to us is a $17, $18 million indoor, training facility that they built that football's using along with other sports. I mean, we're a serious athletic program here. And I think when people come on campus and they see the campus and they see the facilities and they talk to the people, they find that out pretty quickly that we're here to compete and try to do it on the highest of levels.
Well, you mentioned some of the facilities, so I got to ask you. We all know, everybody on this call knows that Indiana, you can experience all the weather conditions almost in, if not one day, surely in 1 week. If you can expand on this a little bit, how do you tackle like golfing in the wintertime when, you don't necessarily know if, it can potentially be 60 in November, but it could also be, negative.
Yeah, no doubt. It's a major hurdle. And the golf building gives us the opportunity to really not miss a beat. Kids can come in here. We've got an indoor putting green that is spacious with, undulation and slope and a greenside bunker and chipping areas so they can continue to work on their short game. We've got a hitting bay space with these TrackMan units, which are, state-of-the-art balls and flight and club chasing technology. So it tracks all of that. They can come in here and use it like they are today. They can come hang out and have it be a place where they come watch a football game on a Saturday or a Sunday or an evening basketball game. Or use it to study. But golf-wise, the technology and the availability that the kids have to this facility really allows those winter months to kind of move a little bit quicker and the preparation for the spring to be a little bit sharper.
I know Brandon's going to ask you a little bit about golf burnout, but do you have, I won't say mandatory workouts, but is working out, even if flexibility or even now I wouldn't necessarily think like heavy lifting weights or anything, but it's like working out, is that encouraged?
Yeah, no, we do it. I mean, we've got a strength coach that actually works with us and the men's basketball team specifically. And, we started working out Tuesday morning. We're in there at 6:30 every Tuesday and Thursday. Once we kind of get to October and we start to transition, it'll become a 3 day a week deal. But yeah, these guys are going in and working out. It's strength training. It's mobility, it's flexibility, it's mm-hmm. core activity, it's balance and awareness. It's totally different than, and I'm going to date myself here, but when I was here playing golf, we went to the field and sports building and ran laps, and our coach would hold a stopwatch and just holler out, "Hey, Fleck, you got to get faster." And that was our workout. Like, that's all
right.
We did. And these guys now, you look at the PGA Tour and some of these guys look like they could be in the NFL, Brooks Koepka and mm-hmm. Bryson DeChambeau and those guys. I'm not sure mm-hmm. where the game's going with the power, but there are more athletes playing the sport now more so than ever. And at the college level, we train like an athlete versus coming in and practicing like a golfer, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Total sense. Brandon?
I just played, what was it, yesterday? 2 days ago, we had our company outing. We did a charity event for Back of My Feet. We played at the Sagamore Club. Obviously familiar
to
you.
I saw the picture. I was envious.
Yeah, great course. I played there once before, so I kind of knew what to expect there. You guys just recently, you hosted last year, the NCAA Regionals there last year. Kind of talk about what all you had to do with the going in and the planning and you had the best golfers in the country coming here for this tournament. Kind of talk a little bit about hosting that and what that experience was like.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tremendous honor. That's the second regional that we hosted at Sagamore. I think the first one was back in 2015. But, you know, that's it's multi-year planning, you know, meeting with the club officials, meeting with the USGA rules officials, meeting with the NCAA men's golf tournament committee and tournament chair, and, you know, trying to connect all the pieces. But it's incredible. I mean, we were hosting regionals around the country with the likes of Washington and Oklahoma State and, you know, other Power Five schools. We were really kind of the only, what I would say, non-Power Five mid-major that was hosting one of the NCAA regionals at Sagamore and Noblesville. And it was a quality field. I think Texas won, and they had Pearson Cootie and Cole Hammer. And those two guys played on the Walker Cup just a couple weeks prior to that regional. They played in the Byron Nelson PGA Tour event the week right before the regional. And then they both go on and qualify for the U.S. Open, you know, a few weeks after that regional. So it was an incredible experience again, a lot of planning, a lot of legwork. You know, I wish we had some representation there. In 2015, we had a young man win the MAC championship, Johnny Watts. So he competed in that regional. This year, unfortunately, we didn't have anybody competing. So for me, it was more of a kind of an administrative role and just making sure that everything went well, you know, in conjunction with the NCAA and Sagamore Golf Club. Mm-hmm. But it's just awesome to be able to have that opportunity to host and do it here in Central Indiana.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a top-notch facility, great place to play. And we finished third. We were 12 under. Leaders were 15, which was, I think they were cheating. But I did make a couple of eagle putts for us. That was pretty big. So
when you turn in a scorecard, It's not the lowest card that gets turned in. It's the last card.
Exactly. I mean, we have I told him I was going to hold off on putting our final two scores in because I figured some other people were going to wait to see what our score was.
Yeah, not that I endorse this because I'm an NCAA coach and compliance is first and foremost. But man, if you can just huddle up there around that scoreboard in the scramble and kind of see the scores that are being posted and, you know, have that scorecard in your hand, if you turn that in last, I guess I would say you're guaranteed to win every time.
Absolutely. Day before, we got some good practice in. Our vice president of our company came in and we played over at the Brickyard. I was impressed with my 88 I shot there. I'll take my 88 and get out of there quickly.
That's pretty solid. You know, the Brickyard is one of the most unique courses around. I mean, just the Speedway, you know, we hosted a couple MAC championships there back in the day, and to see those teams, those players walk into that infield, you know, the inside of the track and play those four holes and just look around in awe the entire that place is pretty sweet.
Yeah, absolutely. Coach, you've got a looking at your roster for this coming up year, you look very young. I think I see what, one senior, two juniors, and six freshmen coming in. What's expectations with the team coming in for this fall and spring?
Well, I guess probably first I'm going to have them grow a little bit more facial hair so their pictures don't make them look like they're so young. it is interesting in this time frame where college programs are using, you know, the extended eligibility from COVID and the transfer portal. We kind of went the other way with it. We lost, you know, we graduated some seniors, you know, majority of our experience, but we're young. I think it's interesting. I saw this comment the other day by one of our local high school football coaches in the Star Press. You know, we're going to get taught up, not caught up. And basically what that means is, you know, we're going to create a growth mindset for these young guys and not, you know, use the concept that we don't have a lot of experience and we're going to learn how to get there. We're going to teach them and grow every day. And as you know, with golf, you know, you don't have to come in and learn a playbook or hit the weight room and get physically bigger, stronger, faster. I mean, if a young man comes in and he's shooting scores that are better than one of the upperclassmen, he's going to be the one that's playing in the tournaments. And, you know, golf is golf. I'm trying to get these guys to understand that you don't have to change everything just because you're stepping onto a college campus and playing college golf. You just keep playing the way that you know how and use your skill set and go out and beat people like you have been doing. And if you can do that, we're going to be in a pretty good spot. So I'm excited for the group. It's I got some talent. It's awesome. It's I got a great freshman class. Three guys were all state players. You know, I got a kid, Cash Beller, who won the state high school championship, was named the Indiana Boys Golfer of the Year.
Love that.
So it's exciting. It's exciting to have these guys in the program.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you got some help. I'll let Brandon go and say you got some help. You got some new additions on the sideline, I do believe, with Coach Sapp, and I know I'm going to mess up with Coach Osterberg.
Yeah. Yeah, no, Jonathan, you're right. We got some, you know, Nick Osterberg played at Cincinnati collegiately. He's a Perry Meridian High School product, played great golf in the state of Indiana, and is coming back here to work on an actuarial science graduate program. And honestly, mm-hmm. we got lucky and hit the home run of all home runs getting Coach Sapp. You know, he moved to Muncie due to some family things going on his wife's side, who's originally from Muncie. And the guy's got, I think, 18 some odd years plus of head, you know, coaching experience at the D1 level mm-hmm. with Michigan and North Carolina and East Carolina, and have him be a volunteer coach and to be able to use him for that wealth of knowledge that he has and collaborate along with Nick and myself and the three of us is these guys have some tremendous opportunities from a leadership perspective at the top with the coaching.
Okay, perfect.
Okay.
Coach, I got a question for you. It came out today, or at least I read it today. Rory McIlroy came out and said that, you know, I've played too much. There's just too much golf, mentally, physically, and, you know, the people that haven't golfed, you know, don't know what to experience that. But is there such thing as too much golf? And if it is, even with your own, your students or your athletes you have, how do you get them to kind of hit that reset button mentally to get them kind of honed back in? Because I'm sure there's times where it's just kind of, oh, I know, I get it from playing just too much golf or just in general. You kind of got to hit that reset, but how do you do that with your squad?
Well, Jonathan referenced it earlier. We hit the reset button by getting into December, January, and February in Indiana.
Yep.
You know, they can't play. They can't compete. They take a mental break. They take a physical break. That's how we reset is that we're in a region where you just can't go out there and play golf and grind 12 months out of the year and drive yourself crazy with that grind, right? I mean, so we, mm-hmm. you know, we kind of take the winter a little bit easy. You know, obviously we train and do stuff, but, you know, I think maybe what he's referencing is just the mental part of trying to play golf. And in his case, try to be number one or as close to it on the entire planet. It's hard. I mean, golf is a tough sport. It's an individual sport. You're out there on an island. It's nobody but you and the golf course. You know, you don't have teammates that can cover you up if you make a mistake, and you don't have a coach
right.
that can, you know, call a timeout and bring you over to the bench and sit you down or, you know, put you on the sideline for a set of plays and then run you back out there. I mean, if you're going through some stuff between your ears, you know, relative to belief, confidence, the ability to execute under pressure, golf becomes really, really hard. And I think, you know, a guy like Rory McIlroy, he's been doing it at such an elite level for so long. And nowadays with the media and the social media and the coverage and the spotlight and everything being, you know, talked about and filmed and videoed and all that stuff, it's hard to be an elite athlete these days, I think, you know, and maintain that.
Yeah. You can check out the Cardinals' first match. Looks like September 5th, the Hoosier Collegiate Invitational down in Bloomington. Looking forward to seeing how this squad does this year. Coach, I have to know, and I know I had this question last time you were on. I was shame on me. I didn't ask it. What's in your bag? What kind of clubs are we playing with?
Oh my God. I got a lot of clubs that have some dust on them because I don't, you know, I just don't play as much as what I would like, but I've got a Titleist driver that's about 3 or 4 years old. I've got a Titleist fairway wood similar. I've got a Scotty Cameron putter. I've got some old Bridgestone irons that I got from one of my players back in about 2014 or 2015. That we went to the national championship in 2015, and he was fortunate enough to get some irons, you know, through Bridgestone. Here's the deal. I don't equipment in my bag, because if I do, it's gone in a couple of days and I never see it back from these players. So I try to put, like, you know, somewhat crappy stuff in my bag so they don't even come over and look in my bag and try to take anything out of it and use it. So, yeah, I don't have a lot of great stuff in my bag, but I got stuff that's really good for me, and I, you know, and it stays in my bag. Those guys don't take it. So I'm in a good place, but, what's in your bag, Brandon?
I've got a TaylorMade driver. I'm trying to think what the brand is. I switched mine. I had a Nike Vite Vapor, and then Dad couldn't hit his TaylorMade ever, and he had it. So I told him, well, give it to me. I've got some Nike slingshots that are ready to retire next year and make the switch over. I just don't know, and I really just need to sit there and go to get fitted for clubs and just figure out what brand. I'm leaning TaylorMade, but I've had other people tell me go Titleist. I went out and hit a set of Mizunos pretty well about a couple months ago, but I've got those. I've just got a new two-ball red-hot putter, so I enjoyed that one. And then I got a little trouble club, a little nice little trouble club I got from my grandpa. So
Okay.
Well, and he's this random little pitcher. It's like a putter and chipper,
like
combo.
Is it two-sided so you can hit it righty-lefty?
No, this one's just the right-handed, but it's a chipper-putter combo, okay. And I tell you why he gave it to me is because, Coach, I can't chip. I can't. I'll either scold it or I'll be too short. I can't get it to bump and run. I can't get it to stick at times. I'll chip good one day, bad the next. Now, I don't know what the deal is. This year, it's the chipping that's the issue.
Hey, you got to do me a favor, and this is a phone lesson, but soften the grip pressure. Act like you're holding a baby bird when you're swinging that handle, and don't grip it with so much tension. You'll be amazed at the difference. You'll get the ball airborne. Your chipping stroke will be a little bit smoother, and who knows? Maybe you'll come back to me for another lesson.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Hey, if J.R. Smith can come back and play on a college golf with North Carolina A&T, hey, listen, put me on the back end of the bench. I'll shag balls for you guys all day.
Hey, what, Jonathan, what's the difference between J.R. Smith and him, though? Doesn't he have an NBA title?
He does.
I might have a good work ethic.
Yeah. I'd give you a shot.
I'm too big of a working project, I think. John, you got anything else? Coach?
No, I just want to thank Coach for coming on. I know we ran over just a little bit of time, but there's never enough time to talk about the wonderful university that is Ball State. Coach, I know before we do let you go, I know your group had just won an award, I do believe, like 2 months ago for outstanding for like GPA. Can you put a little words to that?
Yeah, I tell you what, COVID created some unique opportunities for us, you know, going online, not being in the classroom, a little bit of adjustment, but probably one of the things that I was most proud of last year is our guys, we had six academic all-MAC guys from our team. No other MAC school had more. We had six academic All-Americans through our Golf Coaches Association. No other MAC team had more. And, you know, it just goes to show you that these guys are committed in the right areas and try to be the best they can be across the board. And, you know, it's pretty rewarding when the guys get the job done and get recognized for their efforts, you know, both in the classroom and on the golf course. And, yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that because that was a nice feather in the cap for all those guys last year in the program for the success that we had, you know, relative to the academic side of it.
Yeah, my time at tenure at Ball State never was in the threes. And I think your crew finished with like the 3.486, something like that. We round up to 3.5. But like, yeah, my time was there. I may have had a three maybe one semester, but like, yeah. But like, no, nah, man, I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, these guys, you know, they just they take the student athlete experience pretty seriously. I mean, it's not they're not coming here to try to be the absolute best golfer and disregard their schoolwork. They're not coming here to be a really, really good student and disregard, you know, the athletic part of it. So to be able to blend it and have the success on both levels is rewarding as a coach, because you know your guys get it if they're giving you the maximum effort in the classroom and competitively. So yeah, it's awesome.
Perfect. Well, Coach, always a pleasure to have you. Good luck this season. Actually, I am actually going to be up in Muncie, Ball State's neck of the woods, I think the second week of September. So I may reach out to you.
Hey, I'm telling you, we host a home tournament September 18, 19. If you're around, I mean, look me up either way. And and Jonathan, man, you referenced homecoming a couple years ago. I think our homecoming is at the end of October. You guys need to come up and hang out for real.
Perfect. Let's put a pin in that, John. We're definitely going to. I'm putting it on my calendar now. We can get up there, check out homecoming. I was up there. God, when was it? I think I went up there like 4 or 5 months or 6 months ago, and I didn't recognize campus. It's changed so much. Even back over by where the village is, I was mesmerized at how much change there was from the last time I was there. So for sure.
Well, I mean, how many times did you remember walking out of the Chug and knew that you were in the village when you walked out?
The office, so I don't want to say too much, you know.
No, that village promenade is what you're referencing, the apartment complex there with all the stuff down in the bottom. It's same deal. You go through the village and you know, it's not just Greek's Pizza and the Chug. It's it's a college village with everything that you want down there. And it's pretty cool.
Perfect. Well, Coach, we'll reach back out to you. It gets closer to those dates, and we'll plan something, because we'll make something happen.
You got it. Hey, appreciate you guys. Chirp, chirp.
Thanks, Coach. Have a good one.
All right. Take care.
All right. That's Ball State golf coach Mike Fleck joining the program, as always. Thanks to them. Also, thanks to Ball State for letting him come on with us. So we really appreciate that. John, homecoming weekend, we got to get there. Mark it in the calendars.
We'll get there. I'm just glad he didn't ask me what was in my bag, because I was going to tell him Cheetos.
Yeah.
That's all I got in my golf bag is Cheetos, man.
Yeah, I hear you. Hey, by the way, I want to call it out since we're talking golf. I want to call out Reggie Sykes. This fool tells me I'm trying to play golf with him. You know, I get to do a shot at him because he's taking a couple of me. This guy, I play golf, I'm getting better, all this. Jonathan, I ask him to play, and you know what I get from him? I say, hey, let's play this day. Well, first off, he forgets to invite me, ironically, one day. And then the second day, I was like, all right, let's play the next day. I've been playing too much golf. I'm tired. I can't. But guess what this fool did the next 4 days after that? Golf. Right. I think he's dodging me now.
Does he play with some good golfers, or does he stand out in front of the guys he plays with? That might be your question right there.
You know, if he's sitting in a classroom, and you've got the ones that need a little extra, probably toward that end a little bit, needs a little extra help.
Gotcha. Well, maybe hopefully he's listening. I don't know if he's supposed to call tonight, but hopefully he's listening, and that he can take some of the Coach Fleck's advice about, you know what I'm saying, about hitting the ball,
yeah.
And hopefully, you know what I'm saying, being baby bird type situation. I know you are. I know you're going to run wild with that.
Yeah, he's dodging me. So, Reggie Sykes, you dodging me. Come on now. Let's go. John, yeah, great to have Mike Fleck on. Good to hear. And just kind of talk about the team. And I'm looking forward to seeing them play this year. I wish I could go to the tournament they host coming up. I just looked at my work calendar, and we have a huge group in that weekend. So I won't be able to go that weekend. But I am marking homecoming. I'm going to take homecoming time off. So that way we can get there for that Saturday, spend time at the game. Tailgate area, see the cameras, and obviously Coach Fleck. So absolutely, I'll take a look for that.
Yeah.
John, we were talking, which I don't think we're going to get to our NFL, which is fine. We can hit NFL the next time. I'd rather get through NCAA since that's starting first here in a couple weeks. But Big 12 football, John, what's left of it? Oklahoma, Texas, obviously are your standouts of the Big 12 this year. Really, sorry, Texas fans, horns down. I told you ahead of time, Spencer Rattler coming back in as quarterback. This Oklahoma defense with Lincoln Riley has improved. I have Oklahoma and Georgia playing for the national championship. And I've said this now for about a month. These are my two teams I think will play for a national championship. Oklahoma always seems to get there. Always said the only thing is, well, they just don't have the defense stop it. This is the best defense that Lincoln Riley and them have had in years since he's been there. I like Spencer Rattler, even though the dude's charging $100 an hour draft on campus for people, but you got to do whatever with the money. I love this Oklahoma team. I think they obviously win the Big 12. I've got them going to the national championship.
I don't think they've – I think you can pencil them in. There's no – there's some threats in the Big 12. Iowa State won't necessarily be a cakewalk for them, as they have a Heisman candidate in their running back as well. Potential Heisman, he'll be in Heisman talk for sure, if not the best running back in the nation, kind of talk. But outside of that, there's really not, you know, Texas. Do they really want to still be there? I think they want to start. I think that from what you gather, they want to start SEC play as soon as humanly possible. I don't know why. You know what I'm saying? But Oklahoma should. I think a lot of teams are going to at least have one loss. Like, you know what I mean, going into that, there won't necessarily be an undefeated team going into the national championship games that we have this year. So I can see them losing at least one game, but no more than one game in Big 12 play. What that means for the big delay of out of the land, like they're kind of on the outside of everybody joining forces, you know. So we'll see kind of what kind of happens, you know what I'm saying. Obviously, you know what I'm saying, all that money and notoriety kind of comes back if Oklahoma does go to the national championship game and wins the national championship. All that kind of – some of that money comes back to the conference for sure. But the days of the Big 12 being a Power 5 conference seemingly are numbered. I don't necessarily think – me personally, I don't necessarily think that it dissolves. It just won't necessarily be a Power 5.
Reliable source was that with Texas obviously and Oklahoma both going to the SEC, that the plan that they're hearing, and this was in a Fox Sports conference call, was the fact that you were going to get the TCU. Let me see what I got here. It was going to be TCU, Oklahoma State, and Texas Tech were going to go to the Pac-12. Iowa State and Kansas to the Big Ten. West Virginia would go to the ACC, and they would end up disbanding the entire Big 12 conference. That's the latest from today. That was in a Fox meeting that they had, apparently. Then Baylor, I don't know Baylor, if they would go independent since they're private. Or they would end up joining the Mountain West, and maybe the Mountain West would try to be one of the bigger non Power 5 conferences. I don't know, but I told you with this, John, if the Power 5 conferences try to pull themselves out of the NCAA and kind of control their own destiny and pull themselves from the NCAA, I think that's going to kill college basketball. The fact that the NCAA hosts the March Madness tournament, these mid majors
right. So I know, and I like what you kind of share with listeners right there. So isn't it also in the NCAA's best interest that the Big 12 does kind of stay together? I know the state schools, I was going to say, the state schools don't necessarily bring in the money that the Oklahoma and Texas bring in. That's why there's a flux. And we're also talking about networks. We're talking about Fox. We're talking about ESPN. We're talking about CBS. We're talking about NBC. You know what I'm saying? So a draw, that's what we're talking about. Can your program draw, you know what I'm saying? The benchmark, what everybody really wants is the 4 million viewership. Okay. Clemson, on any big game, they draw 4 million viewers.
Notre Dame. As much as people like to clown Notre Dame for not winning that championship, guess what? They pull. They average like three million and a half viewers every time they're out there. You know what I'm saying? So, but the world, Brandon, is going to go cap. You know what I'm saying? At some point, Amazon, right? At some point, Netflix. At some point, they're going to get into the sports world, and they're going to offer a conference. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? They might be already. You know, said those things kind of. But at some point, they're going to offer a conference a deal. That keep conference availability. Go ahead.
Barstool Sports is doing that right now with they're trying to get the baseball market to be able to host baseball games, but they've already got themselves Barstool Sports in the Arizona Bowl, which was on CBS. And if you look at the Arizona Bowl last year, hello, it was Ball State. That's when they played at San Jose State, and Ball State won the bowl game. But Barstool is now the main sponsor of the Arizona Bowl, and they're broadcasting it themselves on their own networks, which should be their social media feeds, their website. And that's the way, like you said, that's the way we're going with the Netflix and the Amazons and Barstool Sports and these places.
Right. I know it sounds crazy. And when you listen to, I hope we don't get cut off, man, because, you know, ESPN and SEC listen to the show. They like to go crazy and cut my conversation off. Like, when you listen to any of those pundits or analysts that work for ESPN, they're not for this. They're not for the Big 12, Pac, ACC, Big 10 alliance. They're all crapping on it. You know what I'm saying? They really wanted ESPN wanted control of college football, and they, you know, mean control. Now everything wouldn't be on ESPN, but it would be, you know what I'm saying? Well, CBS can have these games, and Fox can have, because they have deals. They all have buddy deals with these with these other networks. But again, man, I think like you said, I said that for a reason, man. There's no reason why there's just not to think that another app is going to come up and say, hey, why don't you do a deal with us? Because they might not want a 4 million viewership benchmark for them to be successful. They might want a 1 million. They might want 2 million. And could a Kansas-Baylor game, football game, right? We know a basketball game can get that kind of attention, right? But can a Kansas football game, Baylor game, or whatever's left of the Big 12 garner, you know what I'm saying, 1 to 2 million viewership? If they pull some, I don't know, if everybody doesn't necessarily leave, I think they can, you know what I mean? But, again, those are things. But like I said, it doesn't necessarily look – right now, today, it looks like the Big 12 is going to be a viable option going further after, like, 2025 or so. But again, like I said, the app game is coming.
Yeah, absolutely. And somebody just asked about the college basketball. Well, to finish that statement, if the NCAA, say the Power Five, pull away and they do their own thing and they separate themselves from NCAA, NCAA has March Madness, the big tournament. And the reason why the Power Five are pulling away is because they think they're upper echelon and they're going to make the most money. They don't want to split it with the smaller schools. Well, the NCAA tournament that the NCAA hosts gets all these mid-majors, what makes the tournament exciting and makes these mid-majors get a cut of the money. The NCAA tournament is going to be dead, people, in a matter of how many years if they pull away from the NCAA. They're going to have their own tournament, which is not going to have the same feel that we're having now with this. D-Day could be coming, John. I just want to start warning people. It's on the horizon. Now, I don't know how fast it's moving, but it's out there and I can see it.
If Mississippi State, not Mississippi State, I won't pick on them. If I'm trying to think of a small school, you plug them in, right? Indiana State somehow wins the national championship, it still will be valid. It just won't necessarily carry the same weight if Duke won, North Carolina won, or another blue blood. This is true, but I don't know. Before I think the NCAA does their due diligence to make sure some of these things don't necessarily happen. I know that they're not necessarily – they're just a – some people, even when I was younger, I thought they were more of a governing body than they – I thought they had more powers than they do, than they realistically, than they don't. Schools kind of just do what they want to do. The NCAA is kind of there to, like, police everything, make things – sure everything's fair based upon student population, how much money programs drive or whatever. But I still do think they, you know what I'm saying, with the juice that they do have and the network connection that they do have, that they try to figure out a way that all these things don't necessarily happen. Everything doesn't necessarily dissolve, and they keep up – they keep tradition. That's what I'm trying to say.
Right. Yeah, I agree. Looking at the Pac-12, I like There's a couple, three teams I like in the Pac-12. It shouldn't be a no-brainer here, but Oregon, USC, and then Washington. I think Washington's going to fly under, not under the radar, but I don't think people are giving Washington the credit that they should. Those Huskies are their surprise team, a surprise team back 5 years ago when they went from 7-6 to making the college football playoffs in 2016. This year they've got that type of program. They've got that team coming back. They only went 3-1 last year. They've got a second year head coach in there, but the sky's the limit. The way their schedule is, I love it. They've got Montana at home. They go to the Big House against Michigan and what's ever left over of that team. Arkansas State, California, they're at Oregon State. They go to Corvallis, which is not going to be that hard. Going up there right now is a terrible Oregon State team. They go to Arizona and at Stanford, but then they're home against Oregon and home against Washington State. They don't play USC. So I like Washington here to lead the Pac-12. Oregon's obviously going to be up there and then USC, but I think USC definitely, they have a great, they have the number three offense, the number two defense, and the number one special teams in the Pac-12 ranked.
Yeah, everything you said, I will co-sign. We are selling potentially Arizona State just a little short.
Okay.
I just because I know Herm had a little bit of brouhaha with recruiting, right, over the summer, recruiting violation over the summer. But I think, you know what I'm saying, I think this team is poised. They went on a hot streak, I do believe, last year, and then they had a bad loss. And again, you can't have bad losses if you're trying to be a program nationally or definitely trying to get the national program. I'm talking about getting the national championship game. So, but Washington and USC would be the top two teams, I think. And then, like I said, let's talk Arizona State up as a spoiler for either one of those two teams.
Herm Edwards and them, they went 2-2 last year. They've got nine offensive return starters, all 11 return on defense. The game you're talking about is their game at USC last year. They lost 28-27. They were up double digits, I believe, in the fourth quarter and lost on a crazy ending to USC. They've got a tough schedule, I think, John. Week three, they got to go to BYU. They got to play the Mormons. And then they've got to play at Washington this year as well. So I think that's two tough games for them. But a lot of people are saying they may be a 10-win team this year. Yep. So, like you said, absolutely, you can't overlook them. And I'm going to give a little love. Hey, UCLA Bruins, Chip Kelly, coming into his fourth year there. They've got 10 starters coming back on offense, 10 starters coming back on defense. This team wasn't great, but, you know, they've got the opportunity to move up here. And I do kind of like them a little bit. I don't like the fact that they got to play LSU on this schedule, and then also at Washington, they're home against Oregon, and they're at USC. So I don't like. I would prefer if they had some more home games there, but we'll see what happens with them on that. And last one I want to talk about, John, college football wise, before the season starts, Independence, Notre Dame Fighting Irish, John. Notre Dame finished 10-2 last year. Brian Kelly coming back for his 12th season. A lot of people are talking about, you know, they've got Jack Cohn. You know where Jack Cohn's at? Played previously at Wisconsin. Yeah, he's coming in there as the quarterback. A lot of people, the over-under, John, this is crazy. In sports betting, the over-under for Notre Dame is 10 wins. I know myself and a lot of other people are taking below it. I think Notre Dame's going to have less than 10 wins this year. Their make or break game, John, is going to be a team that's going to be in the top. They could be in the top five by the end of the season, and that's Wisconsin. They play Wisconsin at Soldier Field. It's either Soldier Field or Wrigley. I'm not sure where they're playing it at. They might be playing at Wrigley.
Mm-hmm.
But Wisconsin and Notre Dame play on September 25th. They also have to go against, so that's one top 10 team. They got to take on a second top 10 team the next week, Cincinnati. Cincinnati's not going to be any slouch. They go to Virginia Tech. They play USC. Mm-hmm. They take on the Heisman candidate favorite, Sam Howell. Heisman candidate Sam Howell in North Carolina. We talked about North Carolina last week and how good they're going to be. There's 0-2 for Virginia. I look at this schedule for Notre Dame, and I only see 9 wins.
So you saying this should have been the year they played Michigan, huh?
Damn.
instead of running away from Michigan, don't they play Purdue this year?
Did you play Purdue on the 18th?
Yeah. I can't.
Well,
we
got three offensive starters back and only six on defense. They lost 25 Letterman.
Yeah.
16
Brian Kelly always has his team well prepared for the regular season. If you look at his record, he's great because of the talent that he has, and he generally has great starters. Doesn't necessarily have great role players coming off the bench or special teams. You know what I'm saying? He doesn't have he doesn't recruit that thick because of the recruit restrictions that they have, Notre Dame versus Alabama versus anybody else, right? But I got full faith. I don't know about – I couldn't say under 10, you know. But he does have tough games ahead of him. When you lay it out there like that, and with a bunch of fresh faces, doesn't necessarily he has a veteran at quarterback, and if you know what I'm saying, as long as you got a quarterback, you got everything. But not necessarily like the kid lit it up at Wisconsin either. So we'll see. But like I said, he usually has his teams well prepared for the regular season. And like I said, I can see under 10 wins. Not for Brian Kelly.
Market, put a pin in it. I think it's going to happen. One team that's always that year that's always up there that starts that controversy where ESPN can have 30,000 shows about the years it was UCF and all that. This year, John, I'm gonna take Liberty again, Liberty Flames. I talked about them taking on Ole Miss, Hugh Freeze in his third year. Liberty went 10-1 last season, so they weren't no slouch. This year, they've got all 11 offensive starters back. They've got 9 defensive starters back. I can see them if going 11-1 and being in that top 12, top 10 to top 12. And, you know, we're going to get to that end of November and everybody's going to be like, all right, well, the first rankings are out and boom, there's Liberty. And then we're going to have to talk about them. I think they're going to have another great season. They've got all their big guys basically back. They only lost 11 guys total on the team from last year. All of them came back. So I like Liberty and Hugh Freeze this year.
A lot of transition on that team. I always like those great stories, the Boise States of the world, the Ball States of the world, you know what I'm saying, that get going into like week 12 or week 11, 10-0 or 11-0, and then they have to play their championship game or play a game. The power rankings, the strength of schedule, those are the things that kind of necessarily work against them. So they won't necessarily make it in the top. They'll make it in the top 6. They won't necessarily make it in the top 4 unless they just blow everybody away on their schedule. So unless Liberty starts hanging up 45-12 games, you know what I'm saying, I wouldn't necessarily expect them to be in the top 4.
Yeah, absolutely. Trying to think what else I have, John, on my list here. Did you get to watch The Walking Dead?
Oh, my God. Dude. Oh, my goodness. Hey, man, cancel the Carol and Daryl show and give us the Negan and Maggie show for real. Like, Carol and Daryl are going to be like walking, talking, you know what I'm saying, zombie killers. We all know this. You know what I mean? That's what the show's going to be predictably. I watch it, of course. It probably won't. I mean, the ratings, you know what I'm saying, I doubt it will be as high as regular Walking Dead. But, like, did you like the intenseness that Maggie – I mean, of course, anybody knows the story. Like, you know what I'm saying, Negan killed Maggie's husband back in season, 8, something like that, right? And now they're like buddy-buddy. Well, they're not buddy-buddy, but they're now – they sent him on a kill mission, and Negan is showing signs of his old self. You know what I'm saying? Because he's not – How could you not love it? I know Walking Dead has kind of lost some of its fandom, not necessarily with me or you, but I know it's lost some of its fandom over the years because some people thought that, you know, saying some of these moments should have happened like 2 or 3 seasons ago. But this is the last season for regular Walking Dead. My eyes were peeled. I watched it like at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, wow.
And usually that's something that like I normally like just go back to sleep with. I woke up, you know what I'm saying, nature called, and I woke up. And I was like, man, I gotta watch this. You know what I'm saying? So, but like, no, it was intense, and it, of course, you know what I'm saying, left on a cliffhanger to watch for the next week. So, I can't wait to see episode 2. But like this episode, between the heat between Maggie and Negan, that was what just pulled me in totally.
Yeah, absolutely. I do also want to say, contrary to belief and the rumors, the picture circulating around the internet, that is not Ric Flair.
Oh, man. No, that's not Ric Flair. He's actually scheduled to do an NWA appearance this weekend. He's coming back home.
Yeah.
So if you have access to Fight TV, or if you have, you know what I'm saying, ways to get around all that, you know what I'm saying, Ric Flair's coming back to the NWA.
So thank you, Rick. We've got our buddy CM Punk, who we just talked with Fred Feldner about from the KFAB Connection. 10 minutes away on Wednesday night. Here we do our shows on Wednesday, typically. AEW, CM Punk's first Dynamite tonight. I'm excited to see what it's going to be and kind of where we go with this feud. Obviously, he's not going to get in the ring and get a match in, John, until the pay-per-view. It'll be interesting to see kind of that storyline. We get to hear from Jericho tonight. I don't know what they're going to do with the MJF role anymore. If they're going to have him have a career match and end up losing and then just go and doing commentary from there on out, I don't know what that's going to be in store. But looking forward to that. And then, obviously, WWE, shout out. Hey, WWE announcer and Indiana boy, Pat McAfee, shout out to him. He tested positive for COVID today. So he's got 140 fever I saw on Twitter. So hopefully he ends up being all right. I think he's electric on the mic. I thought he did a great job at SummerSlam, and
did a good job. Brandon, before we go, I know we got.
Oh, you like Samoa Joe, right? You did like Samoa Joe win.
I mean, you know, some people think NXT as a, you know, assignment as a, you know, as a, what do you call it, like a downgrade or whatever. But like, no, man, he fits his skill set and what he does in the ring kind of fits that particular brand. So.
What do you do if you're Adam Cole?
I like him winning.
If you're Adam Cole, what do? Do you re-sign with NXT? Do you want to go to WWE? Or do you go to AEW and kind of do your own thing? He doesn't want to give up his Twitch channel. WWE has a big issue with people having their own channels.
Eventually, man, go out there on your own, man. You know what I'm saying? We kind of in reverse order now. Used to work your way up, work your way through the ranks. And then get your big WWE contract, and then, you know what I'm saying, Vince, you know, put you in matches, or WWE would put you in matches so that you'd have a great catalog, video catalog, that you would kind of live off the residuals from for the rest of your life. He kind of already has that right now. So, of course, yeah, man, go out there, you know what I'm saying, join Impact. Say they have a lesser schedule, or join AEW. You might kind of get lost in the shuffle. I think AEW's going to trim the fat a little bit. They're going to get rid of some folks. They are. But there's some other things that's popping, you know what I'm saying, between AEW and Impact. And, you know what I'm saying, a guy like Adam Cole with his skill set can get a proper stage for it. How about that? Where, you know what I'm saying, they don't necessarily believe if he signs with WWE, I'm sure it'd be lucrative from him from a personal standpoint. But, you know, he'll be a second thought. And he really wants to – I mean, at this time in his career, he doesn't want to be a second thought. You said you thought he was Shawn Michaels 2.0 at one point, you know, so it could be, you know, saying that type of performance. So, you know, until those people up in Titan Sports believe in you and call you up to one of the main rosters, whether it be SmackDown or Raw, and put you in relevant matches, you're going to be still regulated to jobbing out to whomever, putting this guy over, which is, you know, that's part of the program, but – you know what I'm saying? Everybody still wants to be in the limelight. Everybody wants to be top dog at some point.
Okay. What else you got, John?
Dude, what'd you think about Coach Tomlin going with Haskins at starter? I know we didn't talk a whole lot of NFL today, but I got to, you know, say, I got to pick on you about your Steelers, man. And then what you think about them giving Haskins over Mason Rudolph? Go ahead.
It's a long time coming. I think it needs to happen. I wanted it the last game. By the way, Big Ben looked good last week. Oh, my. The offense looked good. Najee out of the backfield. But, yeah, I thought it was good. I think I want to see Haskins play the majority of this game here to see if he's got a viable spot on this roster and if he can move ahead of Mason. We got to start planning ahead in case Ben gets injured here. So we'll see what happens with that. The Colts, they're back on the practice field. So they look like they're trending the right way. We didn't talk much NFL tonight. But so they're trending the right way, and we like that. And then what else
I don't know
we
what's
got?
Going on. Before we get off, man, I know they're flip-flopping quarterbacks in Chicago. I know we got a lot of Chicago listeners.
Oh, Lord. Andy Dalton's a starter?
Matt Nagy, does he want to lose his job? I mean, there's no confidence, obviously, from ownership. There's no confidence from ownership as far as him and Pace, the general manager, are retaining their positions if they have a losing record, right? They have a good enough defense to win games, but their offensive line is a work in progress. That's what it is. I'm not saying those guys suck, but other people have said that they suck. But I'm not going to say they're a work in progress. Whether Danny Dalton, who's a, you know what I'm saying, longer than two, or Justin Fields, who's when I watched him, Brandon, he looks like I would go with that. But if you kind of go with that, he's going to have ups and downs, bumps and bruises. You probably going to have potentially even in that division, you're probably going to have a 5, maybe 6 win season. You know what I mean? And that's not going to bode well for Nagy because they can't finish 4th. They can't.
Yeah.
They really, Brandon, they really can't finish 3rd. And I know we're gonna jump into more of it in next week. But like, yeah, they're flip flopping quarterbacks in Chicago like it's a Waffle House.
Yeah, absolutely. They definitely are. I don't think I have anything else, John. I'll let you close us out.
Man, I gotta say we had a great show today, did we not, man? Great content that we had from Fred Felder from the Kayfabe Connection. Please catch him out. He's back on Twitter and he's back on Instagram for sure. So check him out for all the content he provides. You know what I'm saying? Whether it be wrestling or Detroit, all things Detroit. He loves the Lions, loves the Detroit Pistons. Also want to give a great shout out to Ball State University and Coach Mike Flint of the Ball State Men's Golf Program. Dude, got a lot of golf pointers, and we learned a lot of more. We learned even more about Ball State golf as a program and the whole athletic program as a whole, man. So again, want to say thank you to Ball State and Coach Mike Flake. And also, how could we do any of this without Maverick Custom, our sponsors, Maverick Custom Motorsports and Scott K. Nichols State Farm Insurance, man. Like I said, man, great content, great show, Brandon. We'll see everybody next week, man. Thanks everybody for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Crossroads Sports Radio Show. You can find more episodes on iTunes and the Google Play Store. Be sure to like and subscribe for more Crossroads Sports content.